Welcome to another episode of Million Dollar Stories, where we get to interview authors from all over the world. You know that this podcast is really aimed at the entrepreneur looking to start or grow a business. And in order to do that, in my opinion, you need to be able to create innovation. That's why this next guest is absolutely perfect for this podcast. The book we're talking about today is called How to Create Innovation, the Ultimate Guide to Proven Strategies and Business Models to Drive Innovation and Digital Transformation. Now, there's a unique story behind this book. It was self-published. It must have picked up a lot of steam, and now it's getting picked up by Wiley, and they're going to be doing a massive marketing push. So as of right now, it's only available for pre-order in the United States, but if for Wiley to pick it up, it obviously is creating lots of waves. So it is an honor to have the author, Stefan Diefenbacher, with us today. Thanks so much for being here.
Fantastic. Great to be here, Mike.
Well, let's start off with the genesis of this book. Maybe if you want to tell us why you wrote this and maybe a little bit about your background leading up to it.
So I guess I did innovation and digital transformation all my life. That started, I guess, in 1998, 25 years ago, was the first startup which became relatively well known during the dot-com bubble, but then burst. And that was basically my first innovation failure. Yeah? And from then on, I've had a rather diverse career. I now live in Switzerland, which is my 14th country. And I've been leading some of the biggest innovation and digital transformation exercises globally, which took me from the United States to China to all other places. And basically, when you look into innovation, you can't ignore one shocking fact. Over 90% of all innovation efforts fail. And that is applying to both corporate innovation as well as startup innovation. That is what I think we can change and what can be changed in general.
Wow. That stat definitely makes sense to me because when I started 5 startups, 4 of them failed. So we're about 80% right out of the gate. Every new idea, and I think it was Elon Musk that said something about this on a recent podcast, but he's like, there's 1,000 ways not to create a rocket, right? There's 1,000 ways to make it fail, but there's only really one way to make it work. And so expect the pathways to be way more numerous when you fail. And so I guess that has to do with innovation. Just expect to fail, but what you learn from each failure will get you one step closer to the finish line. Now, I'm going to read something off from your summary here. It says you've worked with Amazon, BMW, Google, Pfizer. Is that right? You've been with some of these big companies?
With all of them and leading some of the biggest initiatives globally. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So Amazon, for example. What is it like to sit down and say, hey, here are some new ways to, do business whenever you're dealing with possibly the greatest minds in the business to consumer world? So what does that look like?
Well, Amazon was a particular challenge. They wanted to relaunch an entire division, not just the product, but an entire business division. I can't mention the name and tell the inside story fully for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But basically, Amazon, like all other companies, has to follow the same procedures. They have to think about, okay, where do we have an important but unmet customer need? What capabilities do we have as an organization? What products, what value propositions, what services could we launch in there? And what business models ultimately make sense? And similar to other organizations, you have to then build a prototype, an MVP, and see what you can ultimately bring to the markets. Yeah. Ultimately, I guess the game is always the same. Yeah. You want to achieve a certain level of investment security so you don't drive into the wall. You ultimately want to get as far as possible as avoiding the 90% failure rate.
Yeah, I guess what you said, there's probably different stages, but the prototype and then the slow rollout, I find it fascinating. Every time we implement something new, it almost breaks something else that we didn't even think of, right? There's a new system, there's a new procedure that we need to adjust, and this is a never-ending process. So there is no perfect setup, right? Everything can be tweaked and refined. And I'm assuming that that is part of your job is that, you know, you implement, you see the results, something else breaks, you implement and fix that. And then it's just a daisy chain. Is that right?
So, yeah, there is definitely a cycle of continuous learning. Having said that, there are better processes than others. Yeah. And there is a reason why. I think the best statistic we have is that 96% of the startups out there don't survive the first 4 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, some do. And there are some entrepreneurs, some companies who are consistently better at that game. Yeah. So basically that proves that there are better practices out there. Yeah. And it starts setting up an innovation initiative, regardless if you're corporate or an innovator or a startup. Yeah. To set it up in the right way. Yeah? They are the first errors which people make. Yeah? And then the second big error is how people actually go about innovation. Many simply start with ideation, and one has to understand ideation is a luck-based process. So if you simply ideate and brainstorm, well, it's a luck-based process. Well, the outcome is luck. Yeah? There are better alternatives to that with a more systematic nature, and these are the processes which we try to document, or which we have extensively documented in our book, How to Create Innovation.
Well, something that I've adopted in my business is, because I have multiple businesses now, is that the art of simplicity. Usually, if it's a grandiose idea, a grandiose thought, and it requires a grandiose plan of attack, the chances of it getting done is so slim to none that it's actually better to have a simple, easy to understand goal with simple steps to get there. And then you have a plan of attack for maybe the 5 or 10 year game plan. But simplicity to me is what I shoot for. Now, I don't know if that's in your book, but to me, it's what works. And maybe it's because I don't have the mind of an Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos. But if it's simple, I can understand it. I can teach it. I can get it done. But the more grandiose, the more complicated, chances of it actually happening most likely will diminish. So is this something you teach? And if not, is there a proven strategy that you recommend to the entrepreneur that's out there listening right now?
Simplicity is obviously essential, yeah, particularly when you go after an MVP. I guess I would phrase the challenge differently. Yeah? I guess for an innovation to work and to have a good chance, it needs to meet an important but unmet, unsatisfied customer need. That is the essential. So I think before we talk about building something simple, we have to first think about, okay, do we have a thorough understanding, like ideally statistically proven understanding of what the important but unmet customer need is? Yeah, then it becomes simple to build something that will solve it. But we first want to understand our customer need, otherwise we're pretty much shooting in the dark. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and I guess that might make your business so much of a necessity to these big companies, because you can go in with a completely different perspective, right? When you're in their world, you probably only see certain aspects, right? You see the limitations, you see the barriers of entry, you see the hills, but you coming in might be able to give them a whole different lens or a whole new set of glasses to look through. And therefore, have you thought of this? Have you thought of that? And sometimes you connect two dots that were never, ever even in the same room. So is that something that you preach about, is having outsiders come in and present new ideas that are outside of your industry?
Like copy and pasting ideas from one industry to another is one of the great success patterns. It's one of those strategies that allow you to heavily decrease risk, because if it worked somewhere over there, yeah, it might work here as well. Yeah. And this morning I was working together with a corporate in the maritime industry, and we discussed transposing ideas from aviation and roads to maritime industry. And that totally makes sense. Yeah. And it works. Yeah. Every single time. So the biggest step you can do in innovation is perhaps not innovate. Perhaps you can learn from another country from another industry and simply transpose, I mean, do a smart copy and paste and avoid the risk of total innovation. Yeah? That's perhaps the smartest thing you can be doing. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. That's a great takeaway. Yeah. Some of the greatest innovation is not innovation, right? It's copy and paste, but follow the masters, follow the best of the best.
Yeah. Usually and they perhaps to add on to this, yeah. And business model innovation is one of the biggest yet least leveraged success patterns. So adapting and changing your business model, so it becomes more performant, so it becomes least attackable and increases your differentiation. And if you look at business model innovation, it's entirely based on patterns like how you do pricing, for example, has been tested out in the entire world. Yeah, millions of businesses, everybody had a pricing strategy. Okay, there are X patterns only. Yeah. How you do your service model, there are only X patterns available. How you build your revenue streams, yeah, only X patterns available. So systematic, I mean, everything behind business model innovation is 100% systematic. There are patterns. And the good news is, please do not invent, please do not ideate, leverage patterns to reinvent your business model. All of that shouldn't be luck-based. It's based on systematic processes. Yeah. And is particularly when changing your business model, yeah, you copy and paste one pattern and see if you made progress.
Is there a common denominator of how most people come to the realization they need innovation? Is it always directly related to what a customer has been saying? Is it a problem internally that they are aware of? And maybe it's a combination of both. The reason why I ask you that is because there are many great stories of Henry Ford saying, if I would have asked my customers what they wanted, they would have all said faster horses. So I didn't have to listen to them. I knew what the market needed. And I also think about even my business when it comes to publishing or marketing individuals' books. To me, they probably give me such great feedback, but maybe I'm in masterminds and other places that I have a new idea, a new solution. So how much do you marry those two? And is there any type of takeaway from being in these big companies?
It's an interesting question. And perhaps let's briefly look into the history of innovation. And let's perhaps look into the sector of real estate. Real estate is something that always existed. We always rented and bought apartments and houses. And 2/3 of the laws we have in the real estate industry today are still based on Roman laws, which are 2,000 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
That's the synonym of a real stable industry. And basically, organizations did not have to innovate for centuries in the past. And why not? Because technological progress was so slow. Yeah. Since technological progress is suddenly so fast and the consumers are picking up new technologies in rapid pace, we see that with ChatGPT. It took 74 days till it reached 100 million users. Yeah. I mean, that is disruption at scale globally. Yeah. Organizations now have to react and have to become good innovators. And there are two types of organizations, basically. There are those that want to do innovation, and there are those that are afraid to do innovation and don't want to change. We clearly find that the organizations who want to change are the ones who are successful. And those who are afraid to change and don't change for years and become laggards, these are the guys who often don't make it who just become disrupted. Yeah? Those who want to change are the ones who are successful. Mm.
So you've been around these big companies, and I'm just trying to analyze it from an entrepreneur standpoint. In my opinion, I'm a jump out of the airplane type of guy and let's build a parachute on the way down. Like, I'll figure it out, right? I don't think that flies in the same aspect for the big companies, right? There's so much planning. So can you provide maybe a little outline of usually the game plan you provide to big companies, whether it's document the problem you're trying to solve, right? Involve the teams that are going to be a part of this mission. Have a group conversation. Then you give it a time frame, and then you have metrics in place, and then you need a working model by this date for it to be implemented. Like, can you please provide us maybe some of the skeleton outline steps that you provide to your team or to your clients?
So I have been a founder as well, and I'm an investor in startups. So I know the startup game and the corporate game both well. Yeah. And the steps to create, to identify an important but unmet customer needs, to identify a response to it, to prototype, to build an MVP, etc. These steps are pretty much the same, regardless if you're a startup or if you're a corporate. The big difference is, as a startup, you're by definition entirely greenfield. There was no organization before, right? You're doing it the first time. In an organizational setting, as a corporate innovation, you need to think about your portfolio. Does it make sense in my portfolio? Can we create synergies internally? Can we create synergies externally? So in our marketing approaches, like, can we market this new idea or service or business model again to the same type of customers? Can we leverage our capabilities, ideally differentiating capabilities? Can we leverage those? Because otherwise, we are with our high costs of a corporate competing against startups, etc. So how can we get out of the red ocean systematically? And last but not least, I mean, corporates do have access to customers. They have existing sales structures. They have large brands. Yeah, but they have high cost structures. Huh? So how can we leverage these systems in that scale to suddenly make an innovation, yeah, something new, a new product or a new service? How can we make that big overnight? Yeah, that is, these are the additional steps basically a corporate has to go through before it launches something. Last but not least, there might be a concern of brand and reputation damage. Yeah, when you launch something new, and it might not be fully figured out yet, it might be a little bit unstable. Corporates often have concerns that it may ruin their reputation if it's not perfectly working. These are often not the right type of concerns, but that is a concern that often needs to be addressed.
Which I think that what I've seen other companies do is just put the word beta next to it, right? A new program beta, giving them some type of forewarning that there may be issues, but it's not going to be 100% perfect before you set
expectations accordingly. Yeah. That's and exactly. Normally, I mean, most of the type of things that get launched out there are not touching your heart. Yeah, you won't die. Yeah, if it doesn't work, so consumers can live with that. Yeah, you can offer it another price point, and you can set expectations. So that is circumventable. Yeah,
and I always like to contrast what to do with what not to do. Have you noticed any type of organization or entrepreneur, you know, really make the wrong moves when it comes to innovation, whether it is waiting for the perfect moment, waiting for the perfect team member, the opportunity, the money to be there? What are some big mistakes individuals make when it comes to creating innovation?
Funnily enough, we find that it's often the most, it's similar types of problems organizations face. And the by far biggest is not finding the right target market, otherwise put failing to understand your customers' important but unmet needs. That's by far the biggest issues we are seeing. The second type of issue that's particularly a corporate issue is that they don't have the right setup for innovation. Yeah, they use the same setup they use for everyday improvements in their Horizon One type of organization to build innovation, and it just doesn't work. Yeah? You have innovation takes a specific mindset, a specific culture, specific processes, approaches, team members, organizational structures. And if you don't have the right ones, yeah, then you're failing. And that is the number one reason why corporates fail. Next, I guess you want to have a mixed team. Yeah? You want to have a technologist, a product guy, a marketing guy, a customer guy, sitting around one table. Even sometimes in startups, important perspectives are entirely missed. And that often starts with the founder, who may be a technology guy. He puts in there three other technology guys. 5 years later, that's another customer I spoke this morning. 5 years later, they had to pivot three times because they still don't understand what it's all about from a customer perspective. So entirely technology focused, or the next guys might be too much. I mean, whenever you're focusing on something too much, whenever you're not addressing the business, marketing, customer perspective equally, there is normally a problem coming up. These are probably the three most repetitive issues we kind of keep seeing. In total, in this book, How to Create Innovation, we made an exhaustive analysis, yeah, covering all 75 pain points innovators typically are facing. That was based on a five-year research effort with 60 people who were involved around the globe. So there, it's basically really a long tail of issues you could be facing, but these are probably the three biggest ones.
Man, that makes me think of a book called Who Not How. Have you ever read that book?
Yes, I have.
Great book. Okay. And then that's obviously about outsourcing your weaknesses and maybe streamlining your strengths. But I also think about it always starts with who. Who are you serving, right? The moment I ask somebody, hey, who are you really building this business for? Oh, everybody can use this. I know it's a recipe for disaster, right?
Absolutely.
Serving everyone is absolutely serving no one.
Yeah. Top-down business cases don't make any sense. You always have to look at things bottom-up. And I often hear this product is for everybody, which is absolutely bullshit. I mean, for some reason, and amazingly, people have survived till here without using your product. Yeah. So the big question is, when you look at the value proposition, what are the substitutes people are utilizing today? And then really think hard, because people are motivated seven times more by the fear of failure, the fear of pain, than having some benefits. Yeah? That's why they don't easily switch to new products. That's why they're heavily concerned. That's why your new funny product will probably not be adopted by everybody, but really by the people who have a significant failure, who have a significant pain point there.
Well, innovation is happening faster and faster. And this is an exciting time to be around and be in the entrepreneur game, I think, right now, because of all of the tools, bells and whistles. And there are people out there that I've met with that say, AI, you know what? I'm not messing with it. I'm not going to get involved with it. It's probably going to be many years before it's absolutely fine-tuned. So I'll worry about it then. And I'm thinking to myself, God has given you this sword, this tool, this new toy. For you to play with it now is going to give you an advantage in the future. Whether you implement it now or later, it's going to be a part of your life. So start to master it now as much as possible. And I think there are people out there, if they don't adopt some of these new tools, they're going to be dinosaurs. They're going to be extinct very soon. So there are people out there that are listening that might not be in the AI world or technology and using certain programs because it's not 100% perfect. My philosophy is start to become a great chess player now with it whenever it's very basic, because 10 years from now, it'll serve you very well. So what do you say to people whenever these new tools and bells and toys come into their life? Do you say, hey, whether you have a team or teams, get involved, start to use it, because there will be ways to implement it, and therefore you could surpass your competition pretty easily. What do you say about that?
So in general, I fully agree, Mike. There is, however, one important thing we have to pay attention to, particularly in corporates, but also startups, is where do you apply novel technologies? And to illustrate, perhaps, I mean, now everybody is jumping on board the AI bandwagon. Yeah? And just last year, it was the blockchain bandwagon.
Crypto
and,
blockchain,
yeah,
yes.
And before it was data, big data, data lakes, whatever. And then it was before it was perhaps analytics and whatever. Yeah? And you can now look back at those new technologies and you can literally ask both corporates as well as startups, well, was it a success story to adopt it? And many will tell you, well, actually, it wasn't. So something is going wrong across those technologies, regardless. And the big thing, in my opinion, that organizations are missing is where in your business model do you apply those technologies? And this can be answered. A shocking 80% of all processes you have in an organization are in the so-called non-core areas. These are the processes that are not even industry-specific. The way you do marketing, the way you do HR, the way you do finance, the way you produce is most likely not even industry-specific. If you inject leading practices such as AI in something which is not even specific to your industry, can you expect to get innovation in there? Yeah. Can you expect to get ahead of the curve if it's non-core? Well, you can't. You will never, I mean, perhaps you will reduce costs a little bit. Perhaps you'll make your life easier. But in processes which are not even industry specific, it won't add to your differentiation. It won't add to your competitive advantage. So when you look at novel technologies such as AI or blockchain or big data or whatsoever, you have to understand and assess what are the few things in your industry that you are truly differentiating with. And then these are the areas where you innovate. And if you increase your differentiation, you will automatically increase your competitive advantage. So for me, the question is not if. Yes, go out there, leverage blockchain, leverage AI, but think hard about where in your business it really provides competitive advantage. The rest just will add to your costs.
It's great. Yeah, you don't want to implement it everywhere, but just, you know, there are ways to use it, and you, therefore you can protect yourself. There are issues, but yeah, trying to adopt it and put it into every aspect of your company will be very detrimental, I think. But there's one thing I did want to ask you about when it comes to creating innovation, and that is when it comes to teams. I follow a guy named Patrick Bet-David. Have you ever heard of him at all?
He has
a podcast called PBD Podcast. And he says every year he gets together with his core team members and they all come up with one idea they all want to implement for the following year, new innovation within their company. And everybody comes together in that one meeting, whether it's a trip to Florida, and they all get together and then they put it on the board. Everybody has their idea. And then they vote on which 3 to 5 ideas they really act on to change their next year. When you meet with teams, do all these ideas usually come from the top down? I think you said a great quote before. Usually it's bottom up, but do you have individuals on the team always presenting new ideas to kind of put on the docket to enact for the following year, next quarter, next month? How do the ideas really rise to the surface, and which ones do you actually choose to act on? I guess is probably the best question.
Mm. Yeah, so I guess first of all, let's just clarify perhaps the term, because innovation these days is heavily used for everything. No? And if you're asking your team for improvements, then it's actually not an innovation. These are simple improvements. It might be new for your company, or it may be an improvement to your company, but it's not new to the industry and certainly not new to the world. Yeah. So innovation in the original definition, yeah, is actually radical in nature. Innovation is new to the world, new to an industry, at least. It's not new. If it's just new to your company, then it's an improvement. And if it's an improvement, yeah, then you're reacting within the realms of your current business model. Within the realms of your current business model, well, you obviously know it. This is what you're operating on every day. Therefore, asking your team for feedback, your managers for feedback, is the simple best way, full stop, because they know it. They're operating it. However, if you want to make a bigger move, if you want to make a step change to your business model, that is called a transformation. Yeah, that's once you do for the first time something really new. That's when you can ask your team, but you have to look at outside sources. And when you go for innovation, then it's unlikely somebody actually has a good idea. It's simply unlikely. Why? Because you don't know the outside world. You don't know. You couldn't have been there yet. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an innovation, right? And you often, ideation is simply the wrong way to go, because you don't know if this meets, again, an important but unmet customer need, if you can act on it, if it meets your unique and differentiating capabilities, if, I don't know, it will be relevant, etc. I mean, it's simply luck-based. So we strongly suggest to avoid luck-based methods. Instead, well, look systematically at unmet customer needs, and then look at, okay, which of these customer needs are important? To what degree are they met, and where you find the biggest gaps, yeah, when they are unmet, yeah, but important, These are the ideas you then focus on. And that is precisely, then you have a very narrow solution space in which you can truly innovate. Yeah. But then it's no more luck-based because you exactly know which problem you have to solve. Mm.
So I talked a little bit about the story of how you self-published this book and now it's getting picked up and it's been a whirlwind. So I preach to everybody, if you are managing individuals or getting asked questions, document your thoughts, put it down in a book, put it out in the world. You never know what's going to happen. So can you tell us a little bit about the journey of writing the book and then obviously getting picked up by Wiley and where it has taken you and maybe how important it is for others out there listening to write a book?
Yeah, so I guess we understood that customers, that corporates and startups out there find it tough to innovate. That was our starting point. Yeah? And we were wondering, how can we improve our own practices and share with the world at large how we can improve the practices at scale? Yeah? Therefore, it started more of a research process, research initiative. Okay, how can we improve the practices at innovation? Because as opposed to Roman rites and real estate, which is a 2,000-year-old practice, innovation is new. Yeah, the practices and processes, models, and approaches are to a large degree not well documented yet. And that led to a research initiative which I kicked off, and then over time was joined by more and more people. So we're 60 people writing on that for 5 years to document till we had the last process documented. And I think what is missing today is to have an integrated understanding of innovation, yeah, that goes from whiteboard to reality across all domains. That is basically what was missing. And so interestingly, we didn't start with the book. We started documenting those methods and we started to publish them open source. So everybody globally could download those for free from our website. We call them the Unite models. And that led to a lot of traffic. So today we have over 100,000 people every month coming on our website to download those models, to consume those contents. People are loving it. And then over time, by chance, we wrote a book on this. Yeah, but the book is simply a consolidation, a summary, if you want, so of those methods. That's how the good book got together. And then we published it open source, and then people actually thought, oh, well, that's really smart. We really like that. That helps us. And then Wiley came, oh, well, we really like that. Then the leading publisher from China, Jay Teng, came and said, oh, we really like that. Let's pick that up. Now it's getting translated into other languages and becoming a global success story.
Wow.
But again, it started with individual content pieces. So if you're a first-time author, I would clearly encourage you to perhaps start with a single blog post, yeah, with a single idea that you keep, that you start sharing. It starts really there. That's where we started as well.
Well, so the Unite model, people love acronyms within our group. So guys, if you want to check it out, understanding, navigating, innovation, and transformation in enterprises. And it seems like that's a big part of this book. But going forward, I would think that with AI, it's going to become easier and easier to create websites, create businesses. The innovation is going to just skyrocket, in my opinion. Do you agree with me that this is the greatest time to be alive if you're an entrepreneur who has the bug for innovation? It's because people are like water, right? There's going to be less resistance to create new ideas without many resources being put into it. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. It has never been a better time to be alive. Was never that much changed. There was never so much technological progress. Whenever that's what we said earlier, right? Technological progress brings new innovation opportunities, and there have never been that many opportunities. And with the help of semi-automated tools, with the help of AI, you can make so much happen. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, game changer.
There is, however, also a bit of a downside. The question is, how do you stay relevant in a game that totally reinvents itself, perhaps almost on a quarterly basis? Yeah. So the next wave of innovators and disruptors may be just behind you that may be disrupting you already. I mean, nobody saw AI coming a year ago. I mean, 1 year ago, we literally were typing 3 words into Google search and that was it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a shock. It's a total shock. I mean, I like to think of myself as a roughly educated human being, but I suddenly got disrupted 99.9% of my knowledge areas. The only area where I'm better than ChatGPT and AI is in my core domain of strategy, innovation, transformation. That's a shock.
Yeah, what a difference it is now as compared to, like you said, 18 months ago, whenever nobody even heard the phrase ChatGPT and everybody was talking about NFTs, right? So that was the big thing. But the way I look at it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the way you stay ahead of innovation is constantly focusing on how you could serve the world with, you know, with the ability to problem solve. So wherever there's chaos, there's usually opportunity. But also lean in on marketing. Marketing is how you differentiate yourself from product to product, where usually if people start to create the same aspect, same product, same service, marketing is what differentiates. So that's what I tell people all the time. Focus on the marketing, get very clear on who you are and how you can communicate that to the world, but also have the courage to be different. Do you express that at all when it comes to marketing within this book and how important that is in addition to innovation?
So theoretically, you can differentiate with any part of your business model. Yeah, you could also differentiate with your cost model and simply price differently than other players, etc. Having said that, marketing and positioning, yeah, is probably the easiest way to differentiate from the competition. And so you clearly, I mean, there are basically three choices you have to make. Do you want to be the cheapest? Yeah. Do you want to be the most effective? Or do you want to be the product leader who has the coolest product? These are, on a macro level, the three macro positionings. That is a choice I would make early on, because all other strategic choices, including in your marketing, how you position yourself, what are your brand messages, etc., are going to reflect that very fundamental choice that you have to make at the beginning. Are you the cheapest, the most effective, or the best?
Right. Yeah. And I just think that when it comes to marketing, we use a certain CRM. We built it specifically for authorpreneurs, right? That same CRM is out there, but we built it in a way that it's built specifically for a niche audience. And that allows us to differentiate from other CRMs. So yeah, I'm with you. You can basically, you have three choices to make every day with your company. And I'm glad you laid it out that way. Outside of your book, is there one that you recommend to our audience? This is something we ask every one of our guests. Maybe a book that changed your life, got you to fall in love with innovation, or just put you on this pathway to entrepreneurship?
To be honest, I find that an extremely difficult decision. I guess I'm an avid reader. I have an entire library at home. It's still physical. I like physical books. I have over 5,000 books at home. It's a problem when you move countries all the time like I do. And asking me for the best possible book is, I guess, difficult when you read two or three books a week. So no, please don't ask me to give a book recommendation.
So there's not one that got you to fall in love. Okay.
I would clearly recommend people to read, and that is the single biggest recommendation I can make. I see people spending 2 to 3 hours in social media every day. If they would spend those 2 or 3 hours reading, they would be playing in an entirely different league. So guys, please read. Please stop spending all your time on social media and online games and whatsoever. Yeah, that's what's going to make a difference.
Yeah, well said. Rich Dad Poor Dad is the one that put me on this pathway, right? I didn't like to read until I read that. And I'm like, wait a second, you mean the more I read, the more I earn? Oh, well, then I see the equation, right? But there's an action, there's a reaction. Read more, study more, I'll make more money. And I think if you guys read the right books, it'll change their life. So I'm with you on that.
And to comment on financial, you know, education, etc., financial education around the globe is in a shocking state. Yeah, 80% have not read even a single book on finance. Rich Dad Poor Dad, I can really recommend it. is a great book, particularly when you start out. Yeah, and I mean, people buy a car. Yeah, you read every funny online magazine. You go to different test rides. You think about your next vacation. You do every kind of research, ask your friends where you should go to, read through travel blogs, etc. But people don't talk and read about financial education. That is no wonder, as a consequence, you're poor. You know? No wonder. And if you avoid that, well, you can avoid those topics and spend your time researching your holiday destinations, researching your cars, but then, yeah, be expected to work at least another decade just for earning money. What a boring game.
Yeah, you're speaking our language. Financial literacy, right? That's the differentiator.
Absolutely. Right?
Richard Porat expresses that very well. The rich are thinking about money in a different way than you are. So start to learn how they think about it and your life will change. Great stuff. Outside of your book, is there a way for people to reach you, whether it's a social media handle or even a website?
I guess go to digitalleadership.com. That is also the name of my company, Digital Leadership. We are a team of entrepreneurs, of founders, of innovators. We are here to help you both in a consulting way of working as well as in coaching. So we coach a whole bunch of innovation initiatives. And what you find on our website as well are the Unite models, which I mentioned earlier. Most of them are open source. Download them for free or join us and get your innovation initiatives to an entirely different level of success. These can be applied to both corporate and innovation settings. And I guess this is by far the world's largest, deepest, and first integrated set of models, canvases, tools, etc., frameworks and approaches around the topic of innovation and transformation. Go there, leverage it.
Great. Guys, the book is called How to Create Innovation, the Ultimate Guide to Proven Strategies and Business Models to Drive Innovation and Digital Transformation. If I buy it today, it'll arrive June 5th. So get it. It's coming out very soon. And obviously, it's making waves. So Stefan Diefenbacher, thank you so much for being here, man. This has been an honor to talk with you. You're obviously in some big circles, and I appreciate your time.
It was great fun. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, everybody. Let's unite and create a world worth living in, one innovation at a time. Go out there, guys. Let's innovate the world.
I love it. Unite. Yeah, that acronym. I'm going to look that up. So guys, check out the book. Look up Stefan. And remember, a $1 million book will lead to a $1 million life. Right on.